As I said to you at the beginning of the celebration of the Eucharist, this Sunday we are participating in a process that the Archdiocese mandates. But it's a process that I'm intimately aware of and also that I very much personally support. Let me tell you a little bit about what it is and why we have it. The process or program, whatever you want to call it, is called the Missionary Co-op. Now, what is the Missionary Co-op? At least I think that's still what it's called. The reason I say that is because this program called the Mission Co-op, I used to run it. And before I came to St. Cyril's, 25 years ago, I worked for 12 years. I was at the Archdiocese, and I was the director of the Office of Vocations for Priesthood and Religious Life, and I was also the director of the Office of Missions. And as director of the Office of Missions, my job was to promote in the Archdiocese the notion, and then not the, just the notion, the aspect of the church's identity as a missionary church. And I'll say a little bit more about that in a minute. But part of the fact that the mission aspect of the Catholic Church is, it's not part, but the mission aspect of the Catholic Church is part of the very constitution, the very being of the Catholic Church. We, as a church, are missionary. We are missionary. Think about it. When Jesus was about to ascend into heaven, what is the final commandment that he gave to his disciples? And the final commandment was, go. Go to the ends of the earth. There, go and baptize in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and go and teach them all that I have commanded you. So from the beginning, the apostles were not told at all to sort of stay in Jerusalem and begin their own little club so that they would be the followers of Jesus and they would try to get some more people to belong to the club. The apostles were told literally to go to the ends of the earth. And so the very moment, from the very beginning, Jesus begins a church that is part of its self-identity is missionary. If you think about it, that's why we're called, part of why we're called Catholic. We're called Catholic because it's, remember, the word Catholic, I always like to bring this out because it makes so much sense to me. The word Catholic comes from the two Greek words kato, K-A-T-O, and holos, H-O-L-O-S. Kato and holos mean for all, or concerning everyone, concerning the whole. Kato, holos. Now, if you think about it in your mind, put those two words together, K-A-T-O, and then the next word is H-O-L-O-S. And when you put them together, what do you get? You get Catholicos. But notice what happens. You have two O's separated by the H that begins the second word. And since H is normally silent, all of a sudden those two O's become one and you get the word Catholicos. And that's where you get the word Catholic. Notice, from the very beginning, if people wanted to know who were the authentic followers of Jesus, immediately the word that was being used was, go and find the church that is Catholicos, that is for all. And so what that means to us is that at no time can we ever say, ah, we're done. Ah, it's over. We can rest. Why? Because we received the command to continue to proclaim the word of God, the gospel of Jesus Christ. I want you to think this through, because if the apostles hadn't gone out, if people hadn't gone out, and not only the apostles, but their successors, if generation after generation after generation of Christians had not gone out to proclaim the gospel, you and I wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be here because we received the faith that we treasure. We received it from people generation after generation who took seriously Jesus' words, and they went out from the comfort of their home and they went to other places. And you know that in many of the places that they went, they were not well received. And many of them continued to go even when they were not only threatened by death, but when people were executed and there was tremendous danger in spreading the gospel. So much so that almost all of the apostles died as a result of being martyrs. And today, this very day, Christians throughout the world are being threatened with their lives so that they can practice their faith. And missionaries who go from places like the United States to all kinds of different places in the United States, I mean in the world, they're still dying because they believe that Jesus' command is that important that it requires your whole life. And so that is why we celebrate Mission Sunday or the Mission Co-op. Now, what is the Mission Co-op exactly? Every year, you know that the Catholic Church is made up of all kinds of people in different parishes, but also we're made up of religious congregations. For example, the Franciscans, the Basilians, the Jesuits, the Dominicans, the Incarnate Word, and I could keep on going, the Sisters of Divine Providence, male and female congregations, that what they do is they form together and they specifically try to fulfill one of the mandates that Jesus gave us. So let me give you an example. The Sisters of the Incarnate Word, Sisters of Charity of the Incarnate Word, they run a lot of hospitals. They run healthcare. Hospitals, I don't know if you are aware of this, but hospitals were begun by the Catholic Church. I don't mean any one hospital. I mean hospitals. Those are part of the heritage of the Catholic Church. Other congregations like the Dominicans or the Sisters that are with us today focus on education. Where do you think universities came from? Universities like we have today did not come from just anywhere. The Catholic Church began universities. The original universities were religious institutions. And we could go on and on of how the disciples of Jesus have taken it seriously to proclaim the word of God, to tell people what the gospel is all about. And so every year, what would happen is the archdiocese would receive whole bunch of requests. I remember that we used to receive around 200 different requests every year from different congregations of men and women throughout the world. And what they would do, since the United States is considered one of the more well-off countries, not the only one, but one of them, these places, especially in the poor areas, would ask if they could come to the archdiocese and go to two or three parishes and tell the parishes what they did and ask the parishioners to pray for them, and also, if they could, to give a donation so that the parish itself could help the work of that religious congregation in doing the work of Christ. And that is what's called the Mission Cooperative Program. And so out of the 200 different congregations, what I had to do, I had to pick 50. And the reason I had to pick 50 is, in those days, we had 150 parishes. And to make the time and the trip to Houston worth it, we used to assign three different parishes to the one congregation or a diocese that needed help. And then, as what's happening today, the congregation would contact the parish and we would set up a date in which that congregation, a representative of that congregation, would be able to come to the parish, talk at all the masses, and ask for our prayers and for a donation, if possible, to help the work that they were doing. That's what's happening today. Okay? That's what we're doing today. And so, today, the Archdiocese continues this program, and the person who runs it assigns every parish in the Archdiocese one congregation a year, or one diocese a year that needs help. And we do it because, and this has been a tradition with all the different bishops that we've had, that it gives a chance to each parish to hear about the work that is happening on behalf of all of us, because we're part of the church. On behalf of all of us, there's work being done in different places throughout the world. You know, like, for example, in our own parish here, we have a gentleman by the name of Carlos Velez. And Carlos, some of you may know him. He's our only parishioner who is 6 feet, 8 inches tall. He's a huge guy. And he has established a little group here, and they go to Guatemala, to El Salvador, on behalf of St. Cyril's. And they go and do mission work, and they bring things that people need down there. But there are many other congregations. There are diocesan and also congregations of the Catholic Church, and that's what we have today. Today, Sister Mary Jean comes to us from the Dominican Sisters. Now, the Dominican Sisters have a convent right here in Houston. It's your mother house is right here in Houston. And the Dominican Sisters have their mother house catty corner, if you know where the VA hospital is. The VA hospital, the Dominican Sisters have the property right catty corner to the VA hospital. It's also the same campus, kind of like, as where St. Dominic Center is, which the diocese owns, in which there are many diocesan offices. And so the Dominican Sisters not only work in Houston, but the Dominican Sisters have schools and different ways of proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ throughout the different places of the world. And so Sister Mary Jean is here to speak to us about the mission that they're trying to do. And remember where that mission comes from. It doesn't come because they were sitting one day and saying, you know, it'd be nice if we did this. No. They're responding to the very word of Jesus, just like generations of other people have done so that we could be here. And so she's going to be talking to you, not for very long, certainly not as long as I do. Okay? And so afterwards, after communion, we will ask that we receive a second offering. What will happen to that money? That money will be collected here at St. Cyril's. So if you want to make the check out to St. Cyril's, you can. And what we do is we send it to the Archdiocese. And the Archdiocese notes down how much money it is, and then they send the check to the Dominicans here in Houston, who then use it specifically for the school or the effort, the missionary effort that that sister is about to present. So wanted to tell you that so you would not kind of have an idea of what's happening and how important it is. Because in closing, you know what the opposite of being mission-oriented is? It's called parochialism. Parochialism is when you sit down in your own little church and you go, this is our little parish. And if you don't belong to our little parish, we don't take care of you. Folks, we can't do that. And you know why we can't do that? Because we're Catholic. And because we're Catholic, there's not a single member of the human race that we can say, you don't belong to us. You belong. You know, that's why I'm always harassing people. For example, we would love for you to register in our parish. But you know what? Registration doesn't matter. You know what makes you part of a parish? Your baptism. Your baptism is what? The moment that you are a baptized Catholic, the moment you're a baptized Christian, and you say the words, Our Father, you're a member. You're a member. I can't resist telling you one more thing. I was on the radio maybe 6 months ago, and there was a Protestant minister on the radio with us, and he was very, Rabbi Stewart always says, he was very Catholic impaired, and this Protestant minister turns to me and says, "What would it take for a person to sort of stop becoming Catholic? What would it take? As if there was something that you'd have to do, like, you know, maybe take your baptism certificate, tear it up and turn a candle upside down or something like that." And so he said, "What would it take for you to uncatholicize yourself?" And I looked at him and I said, "Let me ask you a question. What would it take?" And I asked him, I said, "Do you have children?" He said, "Yes." And I said, "What would it take for one of your children to stop being your children?" And he said, "There's no way to stop being my child. You can renounce, you can scream at me, you can do whatever you want, but you're still my son or my daughter." And I said, "Bingo." That's a Catholic term. I said, "Bingo. God, that was a joke. You didn't even laugh." And I said, "Bingo. You can't make yourself not a Catholic. You can stand in front of the church and kick the ground. You can scream. You can say, I hate you. And you're still part of our church. Because there's no way that you can leave. We've got you, whether you love it or not. And we're going to care about you, whether you like it or not." And that's what the church does. So without any further ado, I would like to ask Sister to come forward. Sister, you can use the podium. Let's give her a nice welcome.
What an introduction. Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Sister Mary Jean, a Dominican sister from Houston. First, I'd like to thank Father Mario for letting us visit here with you today, and also for the opportunity to share this evening's liturgy with you. But I also want to speak to you about the Dominican Sisters Mission School in Guatemala City, St. Vincent de Paul. I'm asking you to consider supporting our mission. In 1966, the Dominican Sisters of Houston began ministering to the poor in Guatemala. In 1984, we began our sponsorship of St. Vincent. Our Dominican sister, Miriam Olivares, has been the head of that school since. St. Vincent serves 550 students from pre-K-3 through the sixth grade. The school is located in one of the poorest areas of Guatemala City, which is overrun with drugs and violence. However, our school continues to succeed. The families have learned that education is their opportunity to end living in poverty. The children attending St. Vincent de Paul are at a particularly high risk of dropping out of school. The school involves the families through activities, frequent parent conferences, and counseling. The school provides the poorest families with food, clothing, medical care, and breakfast for any of the child that needs it. The school's success is also measurable. In St. Vincent's neighborhood, 30% of the children that attend the public school, 30% of those students who attend the public school graduate from the sixth grade. At St. Vincent, however, 98% of the students graduate, and those who graduate attend high school where they will learn a skill and earn a certificate in teaching, plumbing, or electrical. 25% of these students will continue on at a university. Many graduates come back to serve the school as teachers, counselors, and doctors. The graduates express their gratitude and their desire to give back to the school because that school has changed their lives. No family can pay the cost of educating their children, but they pay whatever they can. Even though the school community raises several fundraisers, the families cannot raise enough money to pay for each child's education. Therefore, we, the Dominican Sisters of Houston, rely on the generosities of others to help ensure that St. Vincent will continue to educate these children spiritually and academically. The readings of today speak of sowing seeds. With your help, the Dominican Sisters of Houston will continue to sow the seeds of the gospel in areas that are overrun with drugs and violence, so that the students of today and tomorrow will grow in their faith and knowledge and in service to their community and to lead their families out of poverty. The actual cost of educating each child at St. Vincent's is $300 a year or $25 a month, less than a dollar a day. I ask you to consider sponsoring a child for $25 a month or make a donation of any size that you choose, and prayers for this mission would be greatly appreciated. After Mass, Sister Sharon, Sister Lydia, and I would love to visit with you to give you more information about the school. On behalf of the children, the teachers, and the parents of St. Vincent, I thank you for your time today and for your help. May God bless you in your generosity toward the children in Guatemala City. Thank you.